Good morning. Reading this morning from Merging with Shiva, lesson 213 on personality and individuality. Many people become attached to their personality and suffer when it changes. One cannot, however, be attached to his individuality. In identifying the difference between personality and individuality, we can say that man's individuality is the actinic, superconscious mind, which is constant, permanent, ever unfolding and secure, and deep within, at a more intense rate of vibration than his odic conscious and subconscious mind, which make up the ever-changing personality. Gurudeva would put that in a very simple way. He'd say, I'm the same now as I was when I was born. He could remember when he was born. Most of us can't. But that idea of being the same throughout your entire life, never having changed, like finding that part of you that's been the same throughout your entire life is the way he would put that idea. Because, of course, our personality changes, particularly as we're growing up. You know, a small child has a certain personality, a medium-aged child different, teenager different, getting your 20s, you're different. And then you don't change as often once you get 25 or so, you change as frequently. But you go through all kinds of personalities just in the first 25 years of life. But yet to find that part of you that was the same through all of those personalities, that's what Gurudev is talking about as our individuality, which doesn't change. It is conceivable that man can have many different personalities, but he can have only one constantly unfolding individuality. And so it is the ego or personality masks we must identify as being the unreal and impermanent, and the actinic individuality as being the permanent, secure, ever-unfolding, and refined actinic phase of the mind. This week, do an internal concentration on the words personality and individuality. Try to locate your individuality by identifying your several masks or personalities that you have created in this life, and write your findings on why you can get attached to personality but cannot get attached to individuality. You perhaps have had a series of good, positive, and constructive experiences. They have gone deep into your subconscious mind. The subconscious mind has reorganized itself, given you a more positive, constructive, fruitful outlook on life. As a result, several weeks later, your friends say to you, "You look different. Your face has a glow. You appear 8 years younger." These compliments also go into your subconscious mind, and you begin to feel good about your physical body. These good feelings, constructive, healthy feelings, again go into the subconscious mind and build from within itself a new atomic structure for the physical body. You take a new lease on life. Your body grows younger because your mind has had good impressions placed within it. Think on this. Be renewed by a change of your mind and seek for the constructive experiences with a positive reaction. Well, we've talked about that a number of times. How our experiences in life, positive and negative, mold our subconscious mind. So if the experiences have been particularly negative, then it's molded in a way whereby we may have a strong pessimistic view of life and ourself. Whatever I do won't really work out. the world isn't going to really improve. You know, we're pessimists. Why are we a pessimist? Because we've had an abundance of negative experiences going through the subconscious mind. And that has molded our outlook into a negative one. But what Gurdjieff was pointing out here is when we have positive experiences going into the subconscious, it changes us in a very dramatic way. You get enough positive experiences in there and you actually look different. You think differently. You're no longer a pessimist. You're an optimist. Why? Because more positive experiences have gone in. And, of course, as we know, we can put positive experiences in just by using affirmations. We don't have to actually do something. We can just think something. There's no difference. Because what goes in the mind is a result of how we think about it. It's not a result of what actually happened. It's how we think about what happened. So we can create positive events just through using affirmations, repeating them in our life, and in that way mold the subconscious in a positive way. Is one of the aspects of personality is if we have a strongly negative or even partially negative concept of ourselves and of life, we need to get rid of that. And we can. That's not who we are. That's what the subconscious mind has accumulated. But it's not who we are. Nothing to do with us. It has to do with the experiences that we've put in, the thoughts we've had. That's what's molded our opinion of ourselves. So if it's negative, we need to get rid of that negativity. And one of the ways is affirmations. We want a positive self-concept, but we don't want to be a strong ego, because then that becomes another problem. We can become so positive, we're kind of overbearing. We're the smartest person in the room, and so forth. You know, we've turned from a pessimist into a very proud person. So we don't want to become extremely proud. We want a certain sense of pride, but not a strong sense of pride. So that's one of the reasons temple worship, devotional worship is important in Hinduism. It helps us harness a sense of pride, because to worship we have to be humble. We have to acknowledge that the deity is greater than we are. The deity knows more than I do. Otherwise worship doesn't work. You know, that basic attitude, okay, here I am, deity is great and I'm not that great. So that helps us have a positive personality without becoming proud, which is going from one extreme of being too negative to the other extreme of being too proud. So we want to back off of it and be humble but positive. That's the goal. Allow the reaction to bear fruit within the subconscious mind. Concentrate and feel the good feelings permeating the nerve currents running through the physical body, thus being renewed actinically from within. Good feelings are like food to the physical body, food from deep within the nervous system. Fed out through the circulatory system right out to the skin, makes for an inner glow which can be seen on your face and through the rest of the body. This constitutes happy organs. In other words, all of the organs of the body are working in perfect timing, one with another, being proportionally fed by actinic energy and the vital forces. A good, well-balanced, forced diet makes for healthy organs and controlled, calm, central and sympathetic nerve systems. So that's elaborating on how positive experiences create positive attitude, positive feelings, and then that even influences our physical body in a positive way. It's all tied together. The body and the mind are separate units, they interrelate. More over here. Gotta stretch our mind. Read from the Agama page in Hinduism Today. This relates to individuality and personality. So individuality, nicely defined here. Let me see if I can find it. So Anavimala is the term in Saiva Siddhanta. It's defined here as the individualizing veil of duality, egoity. And in Gurudeva's writings, for simplicity, sometimes he just says ego. But it's actually the individuating, or the separation. Like you have the ocean, you stick the bucket in, and you've got water. It's been individuated. It's been separated from the ocean. You pour it back in the ocean, it's not separated anymore. So it's that idea that you've taken a portion of the whole and separated it. Of course, it's not really separated, but it thinks it's separated. There is no bucket, but it thinks there's a bucket. Oh. Shiva Shakti has the nature of bestowing grace upon all. This grace is bestowed upon intelligent beings and inert things at one and the same time. Grace is bestowed upon the potency of Anavamala, thus intensifying it, but not with the intention of making the soul suffer. Whatever action is done by Lord Shiva, it is indeed an effective and unfailing help to the soul. Cannot be considered otherwise. As long as there exists the dominion of Anavamala, liberation cannot occur to the soul, since liberation is nothing but the complete removal of the Anavamala's obscuration. So that's the idea of the bucket. If you remove Anavamala's obscuration, the bucket goes away. It's Anavamala that makes you think there's a bucket there, makes you think you're separate, but there isn't there, so you just have to remove Anavamala's obscuration through the grace of Shiva Shakti. That's what it's saying. But even when the power of Anavamala becomes ripe for such maturation, its intensification does not and cannot take place of its own accord. It is seen that always and by all means the non-intelligent object, in this case the ego, is kept in action only by an intelligent being. What's that called? Individuality, right? Our individuality keeps the ego functioning. Lost my place. This dominant state of Anavamala would only be ready for removal once the soul has attained its full maturation. But that's a very interesting point, and Gurudeva says it another way. He always explains things in a way that are easier to understand than this, which is we have to work through all dharmas. In other words, we aren't necessarily ready for this to happen. We have more things to do in this and in future lives. This won't happen until we're ready for it to happen. We can't force it. But even when the power of Anavamala becomes ripe for such maturation, its intensification does not and cannot take place of its own accord. That means we need God's grace. It is seen that always and by all means the non-intelligent object, in this case the ego, is kept in action only by an intelligent being, our individuality. Therefore, bestowal of grace and induction of Anavamala's maturation must be one and the same. Just as the oft aggravating activities of a physician, such as applying pungent medicinal substances like black salt and others to a person's wounds, though painful, result in the healthy and happy state for that person, and it would be seen that the physician's actions are not considered cruel. Even so, for the sake of the removal of Anavamala, the experiences of pain, misery, and so on, meted out through karmic effects by Shiva, should not be considered as afflicting or aggravating activity, but rather as healing. For they drive the soul's evolution through the understanding born of its experiences. In other words, it's the idea that the false concept that you need a quiet place to live a peaceful life, right? Oh, if I only had a quiet environment, it would be peaceful and everything would go well. It's nice to have that once in a while, but if you aren't challenged, you don't evolve. That's the point. We're supposed to be challenged. We're supposed to face difficult tasks and overcome them successfully. That's part of how we mature. That's what it's saying. This next one is the last one. Since Shiva is all-pervasive, his immediate and active presence in all objects and beings cannot be set aside. But where there is no need for his action, he remains neutral and free from any action. The power of Anavamala obscures the absolute power of knowing all and doing all. Well, that's a nice way of thinking of trying to grasp the sense of revealing grace. From Shiva's point of view, he is always doing it all because he's everyone and everything, right? But we just have to take on Shiva's point of view. Instead of just doing what we're doing, we need to set that aside and do what everyone is doing, do what everything is doing. If we have that sense that we are everyone and everything and what it's doing, then we're looking at it from Shiva's point of view. So to do that, we have to set aside both our personality, which keeps us busy in ourselves, and then we have to attune our individuality or our awareness into that consciousness that we are doing everything and we are everyone and everything. So good luck. Have a nice day.